some people that we really like can also be big jerks. There is a character or a person, hard to know, in Talmud named Resh Lakish, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, who I know, I don't believe Miriam's here today, but I know Miriam and I are quite fond of him. He was either a gladiator or some sort of side marauder, road marauder, who became a man of great faith and education. But he was teased by his companion Rabbi Yochanan for always being sort of rough-edged. I never quite agreed with that, but there is a comment in Leviticus Rabbah on last week's parasha about lepers that I think illustrates that he was not fully smoothed out by his studies. So Resh Lakish, when he would see a leper in the city, would throw stones towards him to attract the leper's attention without getting too close and remind the leper to be separate, saying, go to your place, go to your place, don't defile, don't contaminate others. Which I can think of almost no less kind way to interact with someone who has an ailment. My mother likes to tease my father that when he's feeling nauseous, he better deal with it himself. She doesn't want to have anything to do with his vomit. And I think what I want to address today is the ways in which we make others separate to ourselves. I sort of indicated this in the sort of mindfulness practice earlier, that the skin is the ultimate boundary between self and other, between self and context and environment. And not unimaginably, our sages, as they looked at the plagues of Tzara'at, which we often, as I've pointed out more than once, translate as leprosy, though it's not Hansen's disease, it's probably some sort of melanoma or pox or psoriasis or eczema or just a scaly itching. Understand these things to have moral implications, and I think we probably do that more often than we might like to admit with illness. One of the moral failings they accuse a leper of is tsarut ayin, narrowness of the eye, which we probably just call stinginess in modern parlance. And the irony or paradox here is that leprosy and our sages' experience of leprosy and certainly the biblical experience of leprosy was more likely to produce people of tsarut ayin, of narrowness of vision, of selfishness, of narcissism, of small-mindedness, than to be the result of small-mindedness or stinginess. We see in that example with Rabbi Resh Lakish that fear of other, especially in times of great illness, can blow societies apart, can lead us into silos and separations. And the challenge, certainly over the past 14 to 15 months, but I think more generally in life, is to find ways to break down the seemingly impermeable boundaries between each other. But first, let's admit that they exist. So last week we read that of the leper, you should yazgirenu, which probably comes from the same root used to return a slave to its master. But Ibn Ezra, the medieval philologist, says it command another to close someone off. Sometimes I don't think we need to be commanded to close other people out of our lives. I think a great challenge of the past year through events such as the school shooting at Austin East, or Black Lives Matter protests, or any of the protests that we've seen over the past years, is not to view the other as fundamentally different to ourselves. People with other different political persuasions, people with other different color or national origin, that humans share more DNA than they are divided by. And as I pointed out when I talked about economics, it's easier to imagine that the person sending us our package from Amazon is somehow different to we who receive a package from Amazon. That's sometimes the only way to deal with the glaring gulfs in society, is to imagine people are different. And with the leper, our sages said that they probably took that so far as to understand a leper as being dead, that a leprosy was a kind of death. One might imagine a social death. That a leper, like a few other categories, is considered death because they have no conversation or social intercourse. in this time where I think we are, have been so close to, and maybe COVID accelerated this, maybe it put a brake on it, kind of a cold civil war in our society, black versus white, liberal versus conservative, urban versus rural. That lack of intercourse is especially pronounced. And the ways in which we shut ourselves off from those who don't look like us, those who don't believe like us, those with different faiths, and understand them to be different, fundamentally different, or even less than, is a dangerous human tendency. And I think nowhere else illustrated as intensely in the Parshiot, both about holiness this week and last week about leprosy and household mold, the ways in which we exclude. And I think what's been interesting to highlight a colleague is that with the quiet of the past year and year and a half, somehow, to a degree, those boundaries have become untenable, and that the suffering of others around us has permeated us in a way that it hadn't before, because we've been, perhaps for many of us, slow enough, quiet enough to really hear the other side and to let their pain be, in a way that it hadn't been before, our own. Natan Zvi Finkel, one of my favorite sages, and I'm not sure if I like his writing as much as that his nickname was the Grandfather Saba of Slobodka, which I think is a pretty cool nickname to have, Slobodka being somewhere in Eastern Europe. He was the patriarch of a great yeshiva in 19th century. He talks about last week's disassembly of a house to disinter the household mold as a metaphor, that the way of people is that you don't see trash until it's piled in heaps before your eyes and you're shocked by what you see. Nor does one sense the wicked smell of rot until the reek sears your nostrils. Therefore, Torah alerts us to early warning signs of affection and disease before it would become apparent to our eyes. You know, as to quote another colleague, as we enter what could be a third reconstruction, and that the societal diseases that we long buried, the animosities among peoples, the dangers of division, and the potential to just exclude someone who doesn't believe what you believe, doesn't look the way you look, doesn't pray the way you pray, has reached almost a critical point. And I want to say something as preface. You know, we lived through this week the Derek Chauvin trial. I'm very wary of making judgments of legal cases. I think that there are 12 people in the room and a judge doing that work. And so whatever we may have seen with the video is not the same evidence as presented in a courtroom. So I'm always shy and reticent to make judgments of legal cases. I don't think that's... There are 12 people who had that burden, and we don't need to second guess them. But regardless to that particular trial, it seems to me that there's an awakening. Not just that black people are not so different than white people and that their status and pains are our own, but that we share in a common destiny. Inasmuch as COVID has ripped societies apart and isolated us, it's also made us aware that we're not separable, that a zoonotic disease that probably originated in Cameroon and exploded in China, and then through Italy and greater Europe, and eventually here, and now mutating in Brazil and South Africa, is everyone's problem. That no one bound in the fabric of human destiny and human DNA can escape. And that more than ever, what the world needs is a compassion and an empathy. And inasmuch as leprosy, I'm using the coy colloquial term, is a disease of boundaries, I think one of the ways we're heading mindfully and compassionately is to more permeable boundaries and allowing the pain and suffering of the world in a way that breaks your heart. I've seen two sayings. One was on a sweatshirt, and I forget where the other was. It might have been Twitter. Someone had a beautiful sweatshirt that said, America, I've fallen in love with you. And the other one was, America, you've broken my heart. And if the world doesn't spur your love and your heartbreak, you're not feeling enough. You should be animated by gratitude for all that exists and animated by outrage for all that is not yet, just as Bobby Kennedy's eulogy would have said. Compassion, says Israel Salanter, probably writing about the same time as the Saba of Slobodka, another 19th century Eastern European rabbi, compassion is the foundation of belief. For a person who isn't compassionate, even the belief in God is a kind of idolatry. But there are four great divisions in the legal codes. There's tort law, there's family law, there's ritual law, and there's prayer law. And to quote some, the fifth division is Menschlichkeit, is being a decent person. I think Israel Salanter says, we set up all these rules and dogmas, but if there isn't a fundamental underpinning of compassion, what have we really created other than a structure of idolatry? So circling back to last week's parasha about the solutions for leprosy, household molds, eczema, psoriasis, part of the procedure is that the priest, like the leper, goes outside the camp. That at times, to truly understand another's suffering, we have to be compassionate, literally to share in the suffering. I don't know about everyone. I know for myself and for many others in the past year that the suffering of the world has become so great that it's overwhelmed any boundaries I might have had or any boundaries colleagues or friends or congregants have had. And that whether explicitly or implicitly, there's been a lot of tears that are long overdue in shedding. And that we've become, I think, for the good, a lot more permeable. In describing one of the issues around skin blanches, again, what we call leprosy, colloquial, is a perach or, a tether of broken skin, which in some ways could also be loosely translated as a tearing of the skin, a bursting forth of the skin. I think that bursting forth has happened on both sides of a boundary, that others' sufferings have burst forth into us, and we have allowed ourselves, with small and large measures, to become more permeable and more attentive and available and mindful of the suffering around us. The Sfat Emet, one of the Hasidic rabbis of the late 19th century, as translated by Arthur Green, the Sfat Emet notices a wordplay between the words or, light, and or with an iron skin. This is at the beginning of chapter 13. And that garments of skin conceal our garments of light, as I mentioned during prayer, the inner light, the conserved light for the righteous. Skin is porous, containing many tiny holes. These allow light to shine through its shells. Sin clogs up pores. So an invitation to all of us in these times of trauma and change and pain and joy and gratitude. I hope you have all of those things, not just tisk-tisking, but also noting that gratitude and love and compassion are ways to let the world in. That may we be more porous. Again and again, as hard as that is, and as heartbreaking as it can be. But heartbreak and genuine love go together. You can't be heartbroken unless you truly love a thing, a people, a nation, a neighbor. And I'm going to conclude with one of the last verses that I read today, which is Leviticus 19:18. Lo tikom velo titur et b'nei amecha. Don't turn aside or defile people like you, your people. V'havta l're'echa kamocha ani Adonai. Love your neighbor, love your fellow as you would love yourself. I am God. Rabbi Akiva, when asked what his most important verse in Torah was, in the Talmud he says this is the most important verse, to love a neighbor as oneself, to love your neighbors even more than you know how to love yourself. So with the remainder of our time in quarantine, and even as we move beyond it, skin may seem impermeable, but biologically it's quite permeable. So use that metaphor to allow your heart and yourself to become more permeable to the needs and the cares of the world, allowing yourself to truly let in compassion.